Hello, and welcome to the fourth episode of Season 8 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
We're looking today at moving the dials, by which we mean tweaking the controls we have in place to detect or prevent financial crime.
It's a really necessary thing to do in most organisations, Ray, as they're changing business models or changes in the way customers, and by that I mean both the good ones and the bad ones, use the services and products. It means their exposures are constantly changing.
Well, that's true. What's the impact of that?
What of not adjusting controls as the environment changes? Well, Ray, it's really likely to mean that your controls increasingly misfire. Well, that means that they will trip on things that are fine, and rather more worryingly, they will not alert you to actual problems.
Well, that's not great, is it?
Well, it's not ideal, Ray, no.
But you can see why this can catch firms out. If you've invested a lot of money and time into acquiring and setting up an automated system, you expect it to be automated, to take care of itself.
Well, yes, but they've yet to introduce a kind of fire and forget system in this business, Ray. So I think automated needs to be treated with a bit of care. I think you're better off understanding that your system is at its core really rather stupid. I mean, it will just do what it's been told to do and keep doing it, irrespective of whatever changes around it.
Why does the phrase runaway train suggest itself here, Graham?
Well, it's a real possibility, and, well, we do see it happening sometimes.
Okay, so things change, and so must our systems.
True, but irrespective of that, there's one occasion for every firm to tinker with the controls, and that's when they're establishing them, setting them up in the first place.
Yeah, now an electronic system will come with certain default settings, won't it?
Well, always, Ray, as far as I'm aware, but that's never going to be optimised for the firm and someone, whether that's the firm itself or the system provider or another external expert, will have to set the dials to the best settings for the firm and for the risks it faces.
And does that always happen?
Well, not as always as I would like, Ray. So there's the initial setting the dials exercise when you're setting up the framework or the individual system. And then there's the course correction that you do sometime later while the system is in use. Now, what are some of the things that might occasion, Ray, the need for that adjustment?
I think most firms will want to establish a regular review point, maybe annually, but we could come up with a whole range of triggers that would prompt an unscheduled review.
Well, we could, so let's suggest a few then. Well, there might be changes in regulation that require firms to identify new factors and risks, or perhaps observe new limits.
Or there might be whole new regulatory regimes we have to start observing if, say, we open a new branch in another country, or if our own country, say, establishes a new regime. And a good example of this was when the UK established its own sanctions regime post-Brexit.
Indeed. You might also become aware of new risks or typologies that are relevant to your business model.
How would those have come to light, Graham?
Well, the national risk assessment may have been updated, Ray, or the firm's Gimlet membership or equivalent in other countries might have revealed it, or there may have been direct contact from law enforcement in an actual real criminal case.
Yeah, and if the firm's systems were silent in that case, it's worth now looking at what rules or scenarios might have produced an appropriate warning.
Yeah, I think these ones are all comparatively rare. You'd be unlucky to have more than an occasional prompt from these sources, but there is one routine control that might be a more regular source for system adjustment.
And what's that, Graham?
The periodic review, Ray.
Ah, yes. Now, a firm will have scheduled every client for periodic review to ensure no case is neglected and unreviewed over the long term. It might be once a year or once every several years on a risk-sensitive scale. If the risk is very high, it might be months rather than years between reviews.
Yes, but on some regular calendar or another, there will be a requirement to open the client's KYC files, look back at their transactions and the conduct of their account, and determine whether all is well.
And that will involve a few distinct steps. There will be a review of the KYC records to identify anything that's missing or that needs refreshing. That might need open source or client inquiries.
Yes. And next comes the review of account activity, a holistic look at how the products and services have been used in the preceding period.
And then we have reassessment of the client risk rating, which will either confirm the existing rating or reassign a new one.
Indeed. And finally, we have approval of the relationship for a further period, which might well need senior sign-off in higher risk cases.
Great. Now that's all pretty routine. So how does this periodic review for a client bring about far-reaching systems and control changes that affect the whole client portfolio?
I think, Ray, mostly from the holistic review of account activity. So if you think about it, all this time you've had transaction monitoring checking individual transactions and usually groups of transactions as well. You'd want those checks to alert you in real time, or at least close to real time, that there might have been something unusual for you to look at.
Yeah, so if no alerts have sounded, but now in this review, when you look at the bigger picture of transactions, you see something that causes concern, it raises an important question, doesn't it? Why didn't we see this earlier?
Yes, the dog in the night time was unexpectedly quiet.
I appreciate the Sherlock Holmes reference, Graham. It's most apt, and it's a great point. Could we have configured the transaction monitoring so as to alert us to this issue as it was unfolding, rather than us finding it only long after the event?
That, of course, might mean we set a certain alerting rule differently, or amend an alerting scenario, or maybe create an entirely new one.
Two thoughts, Graham. Firstly, the people undertaking the periodic review probably won't have any control over the systems.
Yeah, I think that's true, right?
And secondly, this might be a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, a hammer to crack a nut based on a single case.
That is absolutely right. And it is important we don't get carried away. If this happens once, then I think we just conclude that a holistic review of account activity is doing its job, proving its value, if you like, as a backstop control, and move on. But if you see it being relied on quite widely to identify similar issues, well, that is a good sign you need to adjust your systems.
It relies, of course, on the people who own the systems and their configuration, knowing that the team doing the periodic reviews are experiencing this.
It absolutely does, Ray, either through keeping an eye on the regular management information if that's covered, or through the MLRO's oversight as they prepare their annual report, or perhaps through proactive escalation.
This is one of those situations where people often talk about the problems of working in silos, isn't it?
It absolutely is, Ray. And in anti-financial crime, we have to be able to break through those and establish proper communication channels. For this reason, say amongst many others.
So for one reason or another, whatever it is, we need to adjust our controls. It could be through compliance monitoring activity, either by the second line compliance function testing the controls, or by third line audit activities.
Yes, it could. So you're at the control panel. Time to play with the knobs then.
Not so fast, Graham. We are not at home to Mr. Kneejerk.
Point taken, Ray. There needs to be decent governance around this, doesn't there? What would that look like if you were the head of compliance or the MLRO undertaking this work?
I think first of all, I'd want to document clearly what the finding was that brought me to initiate the adjustment. What's the problem that I'm looking to fix?
And that would need to be articulated very clearly, I guess.
Yeah, in all likelihood, IT people are going to get involved in this. Now, they don't need to be AML experts, but they do need to understand what their work needs to achieve. There's scope for any number of misunderstandings if either function takes anything for granted.
Wise words, Ray. I think you'd want to outline a proposed approach. Which control or controls are you looking to adjust and how? What do you believe would be the result of doing so?
Yeah, and it's at this point that I'd probably want to reread my business-wide risk assessment too.
Why?
Well, because depending on what's prompting this adjustment, I might have to update the risk assessment to include the new risk. But also because my controls should closely reflect the risks in that assessment. So I want to be careful in making adjustments that continues to be the case.
Got it. So now can I turn the dials, please?
Well, we're getting there, certainly. But first, consider whether you can run the adjusted system in a test environment while the unadjusted controls continue running in production. You can expose the adjusted controls in your sandbox to the same data as in production and look at the delta between the alerts from the two systems. And this will give you assurance that your adjustment will achieve the objective and lets you see any perhaps unintended consequences if it has other less useful outcomes.
Yes, now I can see the value there. But not everyone is going to be able to run in parallel, though. So what could you do instead?
Well, you could change the controls in the production system and then compare the outcomes over a month to a similar recent period and base your comparison on that. Any unintended consequences will be more of a problem because this is the production system and you'll have to be reactive.
It's worth making sure you know how to easily revert to the former settings if you need to.
Oh, definitely. I'd also make sure that you document your analysis and conclusion on effectiveness from that testing. And if you need senior approval, use this documentation when you seek that approval.
OK, happy days. You've now covered your risk more effectively. But that raises a bit of a question for me.
Oh?
Well, what about last week, last month, last year, when you weren't covering the particular risk you've just adjusted to meet going forward?
It's a good point, Graham. And what you do here will depend on the nature of the risk, its likelihood, whether it's a brand new typology or can be assumed to have arisen earlier, plus the capability of your systems and your risk appetite.
Yes to all of that. Mm-hmm. But you might well end up deciding you need to have a look back exercise and retrospectively apply the new control to past situations. Am I right?
Yes, Graham, you might well. And this decision is another point I'd want to document carefully, because if I were a regulator, I'd want to understand how such a decision was made.
Indeed. Sometimes it's going to be easy to rerun your data against the new control, but sometimes there will be a manual investigation or review exercise to be done. And here, you might want to base your initial work on a sample rather than the full data set.
That would be sensible. And then decide, based on the outcomes from the sample, whether to expand it or make a risk-based decision that you've done enough.
Documenting that decision carefully.
Oh, yes, that's becoming a common refrain, isn't it?
Yes. Now, I know, Ray, that this will make firms a bit nervous. Mm-hmm. Sometimes this can seem like opening a can of worms. If we find all sorts of things we've previously not spotted, is that going to get us in trouble with the regulator?
We hear it a lot, Graham. But the regulators tend to be a bit more grown up, a bit less reactionary than firms might suppose here. You found that FinCEN had been quite explicit about this, didn't you?
Well, yes. They jointly issued a statement with other US regulatory bodies 3 years ago when firms were starting to think about deploying AI, these sorts of systems, and worrying about the consequences.
Would that be the joint statement on innovative efforts to combat money laundering and terrorist financing of December 2018, Graham?
That's exactly the one, Ray.
Oh, good.
Genius for you to remember. Now, in part, it says, and I'm quoting here, pilot programs undertaken by banks in conjunction with existing BSA/AML processes.
That's Bank Secrecy Act and anti-money laundering.
Thank you so much. are an important means of testing and validating the effectiveness of innovative approaches. Mm. While the agencies may provide feedback, pilot programs in and of themselves should not subject banks to supervisory criticism, even if the pilot programs ultimately prove unsuccessful.
Mm. It continues. Likewise, pilot programs that expose gaps in a BSA-AML compliance program will not necessarily result in supervisory action with respect to that program. For example, when banks test or implement artificial intelligence-based transaction monitoring systems and identify suspicious activity that would not otherwise have been identified under existing processes, the agencies will not automatically assume that the bank's existing processes are deficient.
Interesting. And it goes on to say, in these instances, the agencies will assess the adequacy of banks' existing suspicious activity monitoring processes independent of the results of the pilot programme. Further, the implementation of innovative approaches in banks' BSA AML compliance programmes will not result in additional regulatory expectations.
I think it was worth sharing that long quote in full, Graham. And although it was specifically about artificial intelligence, I think we can read into it more widely an attitude to all innovations in systems and technology. And I think we see a similar attitude, don't we, from other leading regulators?
Ray, I think we do. And that means firms really shouldn't see any regulatory apprehension on their part as a reason for holding back.
Absolutely. In the same way that it's never too late to file a SAR in relation to past activity that's only just raised suspicions.
No, although you should file without delay when a suspicion does arise. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mustn't let a worry that you're finding out too late prevent you from filing it at all, though.
Mm. As we saw in the FinCEN files leaks, even reports that were made years after the activity remained useful as intelligence.
Absolutely right. OK, well, I think we've probably explored that enough for today, don't you?
I'd say so. Except to suggest it's worth being clear to internal audit about any controls development you undertake ahead of their testing, because it will potentially help them focus that testing way more efficiently and will prevent a bit of potential head-scratching on their part too.
Good point, Ray. So, next time we get together for a podcast, what should we talk about?
I wonder whether there would be value in overviewing the FCA's recent publication summarising the results from firms' data submissions.
As you describe it, Ray, I'm not immediately enthused, but I reckon we can do some legwork and make it interesting. Mm. Yeah, let's do that.
I'm looking forward to it.